Okay, I want to welcome everybody and also remind us and invite us to arrive in our in each of our locations. Perhaps look around your room and physically be here, tune into your body as you touch the earth. And when you feel like you have arrived in your body in this place, to regard your community in front of you so that we have a sense of being a Sangha together. It's really lovely to be here. I want to welcome each and every one of you. I see community, some family, friends, Asian Sangha, and that's lovely. So today, I will go over like a little bit of the outline of the next couple hours, and then an introduction of myself, and then the talk. And I'll probably give a talk that's about a half an hour long, and I'll explain that when I start. And following that, we'll have a short break to adjust our bodies, and then we will I will lead a guided meditation using the RAIN process. For looking at difficult issues. And then following that, we'll have another break. So the guided meditation will be about half an hour. And then we'll take a break for about 10 minutes and then come back for those of you who want to stay to have an open discussion. So this talk, in my mind, I've entitled Reflections on Angel Island and the RAIN Practice. I have three titles. The second one is Embrace Suffering, Embrace Life, Practice RAIN. And the third one is Turning a Lens to the Historical Chinese American Immigrant Experience. So, first of all, I'll give a little introduction to who I am. My name is Sarah Shaw. I live in Flagstaff. I've been practicing Buddhism and intermittent meditation for since my early 20s, most in both the Vipassana and Zen traditions. And a couple of my favorite teachers have been Thich Nhat Hanh and Joan Halifax. I've also had an interest in Buddhism and social justice. So I've taken retreats with the Buddhist Peace Fellowship with teachers like Joanna Macy. And for the last 30 plus years, I've practiced emergency medicine. I think 23 or 24 of those years here in Flagstaff. But as I was telling Kelly, I actually was able to retire in October. So it's a new phase in my life. And then for today, I've been thinking about the pervasive influences of the pandemic and lockdowns and the increasing infections and how there's so much uncertainty. And I've also been impacted by the desire for increased racial awareness that has evolved since George Floyd's death. And so I have been giving attention to my own small personal campaign to be an anti-racist. And I will say that I don't feel like I'm a card-carrying POC anti-racist, but I do have a strong desire to share my culture and experience from the lens of a Chinese American to expand how we think about race and heritage. And I want to go on to discuss tools that we can share and use on this journey together, because here we are witnessing a lot of suffering, and many others have witnessed suffering throughout the centuries. And we'd like to find some peace around these different issues, emotions, and experiences. And we'd like to be fortified we'd like to fortify ourselves and have ways to do that so that we can move towards wise action. So recently I listened to a talk. It was an interview between, or Tara Brach was interviewing an author and counselor, Rezma Menachem, who is African-American and has written a book called My Grandmother's Hands. And he talks about how our experience of race is decontextualized, that we don't have as much awareness, sort of immediate awareness of how we got to this place. And you know, race is, and culture really has many forms and many colors and many experiences. And so I would like to recontextualize our experience as a community by sharing my cultural lens and background as a Chinese American woman. My parents and grandparents were immigrants to the United States. They came separately though, and my parents came when they were still children at age 12 and 13, about 80 years ago. My mom is going to be 94 this month. And she's quite an amazing woman and quite a survivor. So they traveled across the sea from Guangdong province to San Francisco. And recently I found and bought a book while I was in San Francisco visiting my mother. It's a book of poems that have been beautifully translated from Chinese into English. These are poems that were carved into the walls of the men's barracks where Chinese laborers or Chinese men were incarcerated basically in a detention center. They had no idea that this would happen to them. And it was on an island in the San Francisco Bay, the Angel Island Immigration Center that has been dubbed the Ellis Island of the West. But I also want to acknowledge that more originally, it was the Miwok Indian tribe that occupied that island and the San Francisco area. So Angel Island then was discovered by the Spanish and named Isla de los Angeles, Angel Island. And in fact, in Chinese, they called it the Island of the Immortals. That was the translation of angels. From Angel Island, you can see Alcatraz Island. And this was a place where Native Americans occupied the island for 19 months, spanning 1969 to 1971. In efforts to reclaim that land after it was, in their view, abandoned with the closure of the federal prison in 1963. So there were a lot of movements that happened in the 60s. They weren't successful, and currently Angel Island and Alcatraz Island both are tourist destinations for people. So I wanted to show you a picture of Angel Island. So here, are you seeing that? Because I'm not sure my screen is showing it. Okay, so this building, wooden building, was built in 1910 expressly to serve as an immigration center and detention center. To enact the 1882 Exclusion Act. So that was the first legislation passed by Congress to bar immigration from a specific race. This center was in working order until 1940 when the main center part burned down. In the background of the main building you're looking at is the men's barracks, where men were incarcerated or caged. for a long time. And what was I going to say about that? They and that's where the carvings are of poems. So when I read the poems, and some of them I will read to you, I was really struck by how the poems express the hopes, dreams, and sacrifices of these men. There were women, few, much, much fewer women and children who were also immigrated, but they were in a different building. And I don't know of poems that were associated with their incarceration. I was struck by their despair and outrage, their sense of insult, guilt, and shame. They were feeling guilty because they had so much debt at home. They had borrowed money from parents, siblings, other relatives, and then used that money to borrow more money from lenders, and the lenders were charging them interest. So the longer they were staying in the detention center and unsure of when they could start working and looking for work, the more they felt that their debt was growing. And they also felt ashamed, and this was expressed in the poems, because they felt their own country, China, was weak and couldn't protect them from the injustices that were happening, and the consequences, including their incarceration. Many of these people were educated, and they often used classical styles of poetry. Most all the people who arrived in San Francisco were from the southern province of Guangdong, which was known as Canton at that time. And they considered themselves direct descendants from the people of the Tang Dynasty. And by some measures, the Tang Dynasty is considered the dynasty that achieved the highest forms of art and culture compared to the other ones. These men endured uncertainty, like lengthy interrogations that seemed irrelevant. They were poked and prodded for their physical exams and checked for parasites such as hookworms, which required checking the stool and doing rectal exams. And their journey across the Pacific Ocean took the better part of a month. So I'd like to read you a few poems to start with. And while I read these poems, I'd like to share a picture of the carving on the walls. Let's see. So you can see how beautiful the characters are, how deeply they are carved, and how much thought it would take to compose and then carve the poems. So poem number one, I ate sea wind and tasted waves for more than 20 days, but luckily arrived unharmed. How was I to know I would become a prisoner, suffering in the wooden building, thinking of my family finances, a double stream of tears? Poem number two. I saw the open net, so why did I throw myself in? Because of an empty wallet. I had no other choice. Poem number three. Since I've been confined, the moon has again waxed full. When is my interrogation? I don't yet know. Family poverty forced me to come and suffer this bitterness. It's difficult to empty one's heart of the anger and sorrow. And poem number four. I totally despise the foreign barbarians who have no respect for fairness. Often they make harsh rules to strut their manliness. They cruelly mistreat we overseas Chinese and break treaties. 100 kinds of autocratic acts, and then to check for hookworms. I just find these poems really powerful. These men share their emotional pain, their humiliation, their hardship, and their suffering. In fact, it's almost overwhelming, their suffering. And I was reminded of the Four Noble Truths, the basis for some of our understanding of Buddhism and some of the motivation that moves us to seek some different way of being. And there are different ways of translating the Four Noble Truths, and I really take a few of them from different people. And first of all, the common consideration is that all is suffering, all existence is suffering, is dukkha. And this is the first noble truth of suffering. And the second one is the truth of the cause of suffering. The third, the truth of the cessation of suffering. And the fourth, that there is a path that leads to the end of suffering. However, I do think that some people interpret or translate the noble truths not as didactic statements about the world, but really an invitation to do something with this. So you could interpret the Four Noble Truths as observe the suffering, observe the cause of suffering, observe the letting go of suffering, and start on the path that leads to the end of suffering. I really like this invitation. And I think Stephen Batchelor actually says it very simply and effectively. And his interpretation of the Four Noble Truths is this: embrace life, let go of what arises, see its ceasing, act. And I use this as a bridge to regard the RAIN process and to consider how we use mindfulness to hold our difficult distresses, our suffering, our overwhelming emotions, our loneliness. This is familiar, I'm sure, to all of you. To live with mindfulness, we bring ourselves back to the present moment. We feel what's in our bodies. We arrive in our surroundings. And when we do this, our experience of suffering or whatever is in the moment can shift and change. And often some of that suffering ceases or slows. There's spaciousness, and even equanimity and joy can arise. And I'd like to read another poem from the same source of carved characters on these barracks walls. And it's almost the beginning of being in the present moment. It's very lyrical with great imagery and an awareness of the present moment. And it goes like this. In the still of night, small sounds are a howling wind, shadows, an ache of old wounds. So I recite verse. Fog and mist drift, a gloomy sky. Insects rub, crick, crack, beneath the moon's faint light. My sad and bitter face matches these heavens. A worried man sits alone, leans at the window's sill. Such clear imagery. You feel like you're right there with him. And there is also the sadness and the bitterness and the despair. And some of these feelings, I think, are reminiscent of moments that we may have had in the last 9 months during the pandemic, with isolation, with change in work style, with losing work. How can we bear witness to this suffering? How can we not feel outraged, enraged, overwhelmed? So this is where the RAIN process can be so, so helpful. And the RAIN is an acronym for a process with different tasks. There are four of them. Recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. And I'm just wondering if you would give me some feedback and maybe raise your hand if you're somewhat familiar with this process or have done it before. Just want to get a sense. Okay, let me see. Okay, like less than half, but yeah, great though. So I see a strong connection with our personal practice, the Four Noble Truths, and this process. And what I will discuss is mostly derived from what Ruth King discusses in her book, Mindful of Race. She talks about it as a way of holding ourselves and each other with tenderness and care in the face of racial injustice, in the face of increasing awareness that can bring up different feelings. Tara Brach devotes at least one book to that RAIN process. And she talks about how the process can help hold and allow our distress and anxiety to shift. However, the coining of the acronym and the description of the process is attributed to a woman, Michelle McDonald, who is a longtime Vipassana teacher based in Hawaii. And I think it might be particularly relevant because of the holiday season, which as joyful as it is, can often be a time of stress. It's definitely different during the pandemic. There may be disappointment in not seeing relatives or friends. There may be relief in not seeing those same relatives or friends. But there's also financial worries, uncertainty, challenges of working remotely, and other changes with work. So I'm going to put up the RAIN acronym and then just go through the four tasks. And then we'll plan to do a guided meditation following a short break. So the first R is stands for recognize what is going on. And you may ask yourself, what's happening right now? So what is my inner experience around this distress that I am considering and holding and trying to work through? Can I name the suffering, the discomfort, the limitation, the emotions, the confusion, perhaps? Can I be in touch with the body sensations, tightness in the chest, sinking feeling in the stomach, some trembling? Whatever it is, can I recognize that this is happening? Something is happening. And then the second one, A is for allow. Allow the experience to be there just as it is. We can ask ourselves, can I be with what's happening? It's so hard. There's so much suffering. I feel overwhelmed. Let me be with it. We might cultivate a spaciousness When we consider something that is distressing or disturbing us, a lot is activated. And it really helps to just allow this to be. So allowing whatever we're feeling around this to unfold without interference, suspending judgment, not interpreting, not resisting, not blaming, not explaining. And at the same time, I do want to say that, especially if we're holding something where we've been hurt, where we may have been insulted or disregarded and dismissed, that this doesn't mean, that we condone what happened, but that we are holding this with some kindness for ourselves. And also, as we allow ourselves to experience this, to feel it in its different ways, our mind to regard it, our hearts to embrace it, that we notice how it may shift during that holding. And that's really informative. So the I is to investigate with interest and care. And we can ask ourselves, how am I relating to what is happening? There may actually be significant relief with just the recognition and allowing, but the investigation part asks us to go a little deeper. Can I be curious and consider perhaps what do I bring to this perception? What other feelings may be triggered? How am I layering accumulated pain onto this experience? What do I bring to this? So it's important to bring curiosity and kindness here. And then the last one, and nurture with self-compassion. How do I care for this distress? And how can I nurture myself around this? So it is just really important to bring self-compassion and kindness as we work this. Ruth King talks about working with the racial distress and moving towards letting go of the pain of the experience. And she advocates depersonalizing the experience. I'm going to stop this share. But I think it doesn't mean to do nothing. It means perhaps to not internalize the experience, to not take in but hold the pain. And we can use this information and experience to have deeper understanding, to be a more whole person, and to inform our future actions in a wise way. So I will leave you with one last poem from Angel Island, and it's about remembering. And it goes like this. There are tens of thousands of poems composed on these walls. They are all cries of complaints and sadness. The day I am rid of this prison and attain success, I must remember that this chapter once existed. So, as we arrive, I will ask that people tune into their bodies, feel, get into a comfortable position that supports meditation. Soft gaze or closing the eyes, experiencing the earth through your legs, your seat, experiencing a straight spine like a plumb line, pulling your head up and balancing over your pelvis, and then tuning in to what anchors you. your breath in and out through your nostrils, rise and fall of the abdomen or expansion and contraction of the chest. And when you are ready, I will ask that you bring to mind some difficult aspect of your life. It may be related to isolation, a difficult relationship, uncertainty, something overwhelming, or just something. It doesn't have to be something big. It can be something small, but something that is a little bit uncomfortable. And as you bring this up, and as you are settled, we can recognize together what this is about and how this feels in your body. What emotions arise? Can we recognize and name this discomfort? Do we notice some body sensations? And I'm going to allow some silence for you to settle into this consideration. So what is happening right now? What is my inner experience of this distress? Bringing attention back to this moment and this discomfort or event. What are the body sensations? Where is it in my body? Do I notice that it may be a little less personal if I name it? It is here. This is what it is. And now that I've brought this to mind and I recognize that there is something happening now, can I be with this? Can I allow it to be? Can I be with what is happening? Oh, it is painful. It's hard, but let me stay with this. Maybe it's, I feel sad. I feel hurt. I feel ashamed. I want to blame. Can I just be with this? Can I name this? This is confusion. Can I hold this? Can I allow this to be without interference, without resistance, without blaming? No need to know why. And as you allow this to be, and you to be with this, is there any shifting? Do you notice any movement or spaciousness? Just what do you notice? And now, if you're ready, perhaps we can go a little deeper. We can move to investigate with care and attention. We can ask ourselves, how am I relating to what is happening? Can I be curious? What am I bringing to the situation? Perhaps there are assumptions I am making. Do they support distress or freedom? Does this distress have an element of craving, ill will, selfishness? In my convictions, what might I be leaving out of view? I care about this. I am curious. And I care about myself. And if the mind wanders, we bring ourselves back to the present moment. And we are curious and we are caring. Investigation is hard work. Let's move on to nurture with self-compassion. How do I care for this distress? What do I need to nurture myself around this distress? You might consider asking your heart, what supports release? As I consider what I need or what will help nurture myself, perhaps I can soften my attachments generated by the mind and my emotions. I would like to care tenderly for my suffering. And I invite you to attend to this moment, anchoring in the breathing or with sounds. And we will be silent for a few more minutes until the bell sounds. And then we can transition to a metta meditation for a few more minutes. Thank you, everyone. Now I'd just like to invite you to adjust your posture and can lead in a short metta meditation. So settling again into our bodies. We've done some hard work, perhaps. Let your awareness come to your heart and your chest. And bring to mind someone or some being or some setting that brings you peace, brings you joy, brings you warmth. This could be a good friend, spouse, child, puppy, cat. And take in that feeling of warmth, acceptance that you experience as you regard this being. And that warmth comes into your heart and fills your body and your being. I invite you to breathe it in and fill your body with that warmth. And as you fill yourself with this sense of well-being, of warmth, of comfort, of nurturing, consider expanding it around you to loved ones, to friends, to neighbors. How good it feels to share that warmth with this Sangha. And if you're able or want to, you can expand this feeling further as far as you'd like, extending the merit of this work together, this sitting, this being peaceful with all beings. And using perhaps well-wishing, may you be happy. May I be happy. May we be peaceful. May we find joy. May we be healthy. May we be happy. May we have well-being.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.